Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. What's in a tax abatement? In other words, how much bang are we getting for our foregone tax revenue buck when a tax abatement, there are many kinds, is afforded an individual or a business? Nobody is absolutely sure, but it's still a popular tool for economic development locally, statewide, and across the nation. Joining us later on to talk about the county's work with tax abatements will be Franklin County Economic and Development Planning Director James Schimmer. And then Ohio State University researcher and professor Rob Greenbaum will join us. He studies the data on such things. Right now, Mark Ferenchik of the Columbus Dispatch has joined us to talk about the latest tax abatements in the news. Hey, Mark.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
No problem.
Are Columbus and Franklin County big into tax abatement strategies?
Very much so. I know Columbus for many, many years, not only with businesses, but also in trying to redevelop central city neighborhoods, have been offering tax abatements to try to rebuild and re-inject some enthusiasm into those neighborhoods. And it's going to take some time to see how effective they are. Again, just recently, the city council approved tax abatements for an east side neighborhood near Livingston Avenue and Barnett, where city officials kind of rediscovered recently in reviewing a national church residences project there that the area had slipped considerably. There are a number of vacant apartment complexes in the area. They decided that, and also a number of older residential neighborhoods built in the 50s and 60s, that are starting to slip, and they thought that the way to inject some more energy into the neighborhood perhaps is through tax abatements, through either improvements to the properties or through new home building. And it will be interesting to see how successful that is. It's going to take some time. I actually got an email this morning from somebody who heard about that, a property manager, and wanted to see how they could get some more information on it. So there will probably be a trickle of interest. It's just also getting the word out that this is available and how many people will take advantage of it.
When you go out and talk to folks in neighborhoods like that, do they know what this is all about? Do they understand it?
Not very much. In a lot of these neighborhoods, people are strapped for cash in the first place, so they don't necessarily have a lot of money to renovate their homes on their own. The people I talked to after the city approved this abatement said that they would be interested in that in some cases because it would free up some money to make those improvements. Now, the problem is that a lot of people simply don't know about this. I know I did a story when the city created neighborhood investment districts, I want to say 8 years ago now, and a year later, only 20 people had taken advantage of it.
No, a neighborhood investment district, what does that do?
Again, the city designated, it's now a number of districts. There are basically 14 areas that can get tax abatements. But back in 2003, they created five districts. They were in Linden, the south side, the Hilltop, the east side, where if you, again, made improvements to your homes or if you built new homes, you'd be able to get some kind of tax abatements. There are cities like Cleveland that offer citywide tax abatements because of the decline of the city overall. Columbus isn't obviously to that point yet. We're still gaining population. But there are targeted tax abatement areas to try to drive interest and investment in those areas. Last week, the city told me I think there had been like 580 or so property owners have taken advantage of those residential abatements so far. So it still is scattered. And does it help really bring these areas back up? It's going to take some time to find out.
Does it help them bring them back up? They've said there's 500. They've been doing this for a number of years now.
Yes.
What encourages them to continue doing it? Why are they doing it if they don't know whether it helps or not?
There's a feeling that they have to do that in these areas because the private sector is not involved in and is not interested in either building housing, new housing, or to take the risk of getting involved in a major development in some of these areas without these kind of abatements. A lot of nonprofits are involved in this. Columbus Housing Partnership certainly is involved on the Near East Side and in other areas building homes, but the private sector is not. Dominion Homes wanted to build a 106, I think, home development on the Hilltop in the Wheatland Avenue area on some old state property. That never happened for a variety of reasons. Some doctor's offices are now being discussed for that area. But without these types of incentives, it's hard to get the private sector interested in doing business in some neighborhoods like this.
Now, for people who do live there and could take advantage of the tax abatements, those abatements come after the expenditures.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So there isn't a huge cash flow. There's a cash flow problem through there as it is. So how many folks realistically can take advantage of these kinds of things? And what kind of improvements fall under it as well? What do they mean by that?
Well, again, the abatements are on the improvements made to the property. It's not on your entire home value. If you make a certain level of improvements, and in this case on the east side, there are a variety of different levels that you can get different types of abatements for, whether it be 10 years, 12 years, 100%. It just depends on the level of improvements you make, and then the abatement is actually on the improvement to the property. And again, it's hard to say how much it really helps in the long run, because if you go to a lot of neighborhoods where you've had a lot of these abatements before, whether they be on the Near East Side or Linden or some of these other areas in the Hilltop, east of Hague Avenue, these are areas that have all been hit hard by foreclosures, and that's played a major part in what's happened to those neighborhoods overall. And have the abatements been able to really stem a lot of these problems? You really can't say right now.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mark Ferenchik. He's a Dispatch reporter. He's covered tax abatements for the city of Columbus and elsewhere in central Ohio for quite a while now, and that's what we're talking about. I would like to know if there are any listeners out there and you've benefited from a tax abatement of some form, or if you've tried to and have failed, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And of course, you can always go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your comment there. But have you tried to benefit from a tax abatement and failed, or have you succeeded? We'd love to hear your story and hear what it was like and how it helped you. Mark, do residential taxpayers get a fair shake of the tax abatement category, or are they geared in the city mostly toward commercial job-creating entities?
There are many abatements that are geared towards creating jobs in the city. And again, as Jim knows, Jim Schimmer, who is with us today, there have been a lot of there's been a lot of competition among cities here to bring jobs to their areas, and that's created some friction, certainly from time to time. There are cities that might offer abatements to try to lure jobs from one area to the next, not necessarily creating jobs, just moving jobs from one place to another. City Columbus certainly has been pretty aggressive in offering abatements to create jobs. I know recently the city council just dissolved three abatements because they did not create the jobs that they said they were going to. I think one of those businesses had declared bankruptcy as well, Columbus Wood Products. But I know that over the past few years, the Tax Incentive Review Council, which reviews abatements every year, has been a little bit more aggressive in making sure that companies live up to their agreements in terms of creating jobs.
Are there penalties if they don't, or do they just do the clawback or whatever?
There can be a clawback, and I'm trying to remember if there are penalties themselves.
Jim Schimmer, County.
Good morning,
Economic Development Director. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you. I appreciate being here. There is a clawback by state provision, and a company can lose its abatement. And depending on how the Tax Incentive Review Council views the situation, they can also require repayment on any tax abatement.
Doesn't the state control as well shifting of jobs between regions just to benefit from tax abatements and different kinds of tax credits?
The Department of Development does make a kind of a ruling on what I'll call interregional job moves. There has to be a compelling reason for the company to have maybe it's grown out of its space, it's landlocked, it can't move forward. Interesting situation, I think. in recent time in Gahanna was the situation with EMH&T, where although they may have been their largest employer or second largest employer, they were in seven or eight buildings scattered throughout the city of Gahanna. That's obviously not a very efficient operation, and the company decided that they would like to move into one single location. That was done. In fact, Columbus checked with the state to make sure that they agreed with that assessment, and the company did move, in fact, up to Columbus in New Albany area.
All righty. We're going to have to take a short break. Just to remind you, we're talking with Mark Ferencik, dispatch reporter, and also Jim Schimmer. He's Franklin County Economic and Development Planning Director. They'll both be back with us when we return after this break. If you have an experience with the tax abatement, either as a business owner or as a homeowner or a property owner, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to the Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. My producer, Amy Jurovich, is checking it regularly. Give her something to do. We're going to take a break now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
When things get especially hot in politics, sometimes there's nothing in the English language to contain your meaning. Sarah Palin.
They have power in their words. They could refute what it is that this group is saying.
And when things get really confusing, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, translates for you. I'm Neil Conan. Join us for a special Rockies edition of the Political Junkie, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation will be here at 2 o'clock this afternoon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 77 degrees currently in downtown Columbus at 10:19. A few clouds today and some sunshine, also a chance of afternoon rain, maybe a thunderstorm, and a high of 88. A few clouds this evening and a chance of evening rain, a low of 68 degrees.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining me today to talk about tax abatements, who are they and what do they do for us, Mark Ferencik, a dispatch reporter, and also Jim Schimmer. He's the Franklin County Economic and Development Planning Director. Jim, the official welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate being here, Ann. It's a great topic and one that I live every day. And I'm so glad to know that we have two guests on that also have a fine interest. Mark has been a terrific writer on the topic for a number of years and understands the topic, and I know Rob does as well. I've looked at some of his writings, and it's good to be here. I really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. Rob Greenbaum, OSU professor, will be joining us in the third segment. We'll be talking about his research into this topic. Before we move on into Jim more, I wanted to ask Mark, in the story last week, you quoted Edward Hill of Cleveland State University, who said that targeted abatement areas like those ones we were talking about can work, but only if there's aggressive code enforcement. And I was wondering, what is that about and why is that?
I think he was just referring to the fact that if you're going to have residents try to take advantage of tax abatements and if they're going to make improvements to their properties to get tax abatements, that the cities need to be aggressive in terms of going after folks in the area who are not keeping their properties up. If people are making improvements and it's scattered and the rest of the neighborhood continues to decline, you're not bringing the entire area back up. It's not going to work unless you have a large number of properties that are be able to be maintained properly. The problem, obviously, is that a lot of folks don't have the resources to do that, and certainly cities and other agencies can provide some of those resources if they don't. But if you just have one house here that's making a significant improvement and you have four more down the street that aren't, the neighborhoods, it's just not going to work overall.
So let's talk about the Westland tax break. You wrote about that on July 7th. Tell us about that, what it's going to do. You're saying businesses that expand or build in the Westland area now could qualify for tax breaks. All different kinds of tax breaks?
It's a up to a 10-year 75% property tax break for commercial properties along the West Broad Street corridor. It's not for residential properties. And I think – and this was discussed – this has been discussed for a while. This came about even before the casino was being discussed. Prairie Township and the county have had concerns about the decline in the corridor or the potential decline with Westland's problems across 270. There are still some strong businesses along the area. The shopping center is pretty strong. There's a good Giant Eagle there. The Lincoln Village residential area is still solid. There have been a number of problem apartment complexes there. There have been some closed businesses there. There's a former 60s-era hotel, which was a hometown in its last incarnation, that's blown out beyond description. I went there a couple weeks ago and walked the property, easily got into hotel rooms to see what was in there, and it's a mess. And again, to bring interested parties back into this area, this tax abatement area was created, and it's a pretty large swath. And in the meantime, there are also planned improvements to improve West Broad Street itself with streetscape improvements on either side of I-270, so to try to redevelop that entire area at the same time.
Jim, when it comes to attracting businesses to a place like, to an area like this, what is there any sense about what can be more effective or what's more important, or is it in the eye of the beholder? Things like tax abatements or things like streetscape improvements?
Well, one of the key issues that you deal with right away is that you have to have interested parties. I don't think it's a really good idea for government to come in and overlay an area where property owners are not interested in doing anything. In this case, Prairie Township has been a leader, and they've been trying to, as Mark said, for a number of years now, push the idea that this is an important commercial corridor. And the area, just to be clear, I want your listeners to understand, we're talking about west of I-270. We are not talking about the casino area or Westland Mall. This is an area that traditionally has had a very stable commercial environment for a number of years. Interesting, as Mark pointed out, this is Route 40. It had for a long, long time before the interstate was there, hotels were located along this area, and it did quite well for a number of years. It still is very viable. There's no doubt about it. But what we're trying to do is to make sure that properties that have been seeing tremendous disinvestment have the opportunity to be brought back to a new life. And the commercial activity, which is important to Franklin County, and that's one of the things I wanted to be clear about too to your listeners, is to understand that the city of Columbus, their primary revenue source is going to be income tax. In Franklin County, it's sales tax. So Franklin County is going to do deals which help sales tax whenever possible. We're also very, very interested in jobs. That is really the ultimate bottom line. We want to try and make sure that we get employment for our Franklin County residents. But we look at this as a situation where we're trying to increase the sales tax base by doing infill projects. What's so interesting about the West Side?
What's an infill project? I'm sorry.
Well, it might be a place where you had a gas station or a some former activity that isn't viable anymore. It's gone out of way. There's disinvestment in the property. It's better to tear it down, start fresh, put in a new building or structure. And as Mark mentioned earlier, and I think this is really important as well, is that this is for real property improvements. So we're talking not just about a simple little paint job on a building. We're talking about major investment in a property that's going to be there for a while. The way that I personally look at economic development is that government needs to be a stimulus, a catalyst in certain areas. But again, your first question where we started this conversation was that how do you know? Well, you know when you're approached by people who want to do investment or local government officials who, you know, are dedicated to getting something done in a specific area of the city.
Let's talk about the Short North, which is considered, you know, the grand success story, because even unlike German Village to a certain degree, there's just been a lot of commercial activity there. And at the same time, 20-odd years ago, there were people improving their homes and that kind of a thing at the same time. So when you're talking about the county's interest in generating sales tax revenue and focused on that, how do you focus on developing business opportunities or developing opportunities for businesses to expand or open in that area without looking at the residential makeup of the area?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a challenge. There are only so many things that a county government, in this case, our county government, can do. We are involved in residential programs, but I think the idea that's emerged through time, and Mark has been around long enough to see this, I think is, you know, gosh, I hate to say I'm a long-time government official, but, you know, it's getting to be that way these days. I've been around for a while. We have all evolved our thinking in a lot of ways, where it used to be a situation where one size fit all and, you know, you looked at just commercial or just retail or that's changed dramatically. And I think the planning in the city of Columbus as well as Franklin County has gotten so much better, and it's holistic in a lot of ways. You look at things like housing, but you also take a look at the fact that there are social service needs and homeless people. And it's a community, it's an environment, and it's organic in a lot of ways. But for the work that I do and my colleagues do in Central Ohio, we're really there to be a catalyst, and we're really there to try and start a operation or start a small business. One of the things about Franklin County that differentiates itself from the city of Columbus is that the commissioners are very focused on startup small businesses. So we
in other words.
Correct. Okay. Or also assisting existing businesses. Okay. I know that sounds funny, but one of the key things there is that, you know, we need to understand that we have a niche that we can play in Franklin County. We're not as large as the city of Columbus. So the area that we control is about 30% of the county. And in that area, the county commissioners have dedicated themselves to make sure that they understand that tax abatement is important in certain situations, but maybe more importantly in this economy, it's the access to capital. So we have established some microenterprise loan programs through Economic Community Development Institute that have been very successful. Additionally, we have a loan program through the Community Capital Development Corporation that is for larger projects. And so retention is important, job creation is important, but startup businesses are equally important. And both in the technology area as well as just general retail, we've been fairly successful in that area. So it's important for your listeners to understand that the concept of tax abatement or governmental assistance should always be changing. It should always be evolving with the economy and with the situation you have in hand. And if you don't have a strong economic development policy that evolves, you're a dinosaur. And you're going to get either beat by other communities or you're not going to have a whole lot happen in your own communities and you'll see your revenue fall.
Let's talk about the casino area for just a minute, because you made the point that the expansion in what's, you know, called between the casino and Doctor's Hospital, right? That's the area you're talking about, we were talking about earlier.
Well, actually, everything is west of 270.
Everything's west of 270.
Right.
But it does create a nice bookend for the casino when it goes up.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And it's a gateway entrance to the city as well.
Right. You said that the tax breaks over in that area would be negotiated on a case-by-case basis. And I'm wondering, how do you do that?
Well, let me explain that, as I said earlier, how the programs have evolved through time. Probably, gosh, I'd say 7 or 8 or 10 years ago, you would have had a CRA that would have allowed for carte blanche, meaning you create a boundary area and you say everybody inside that boundary area is eligible for tax abatement if they do something with their property. This is an example of how the law has changed and evolved. And it says now that, yes, create the boundary. Everybody in that area is eligible. But for each deal you do, there will be a separate agreement needed for that. So the government has control over what's happening in terms of are you stimulating jobs? Are you creating the investment that you're talking about? So it's important to understand that. And then at the same time, you know, realize that in this specific area of the city, the market's always been there. It's still there. The skin color may have changed. You know, it may now be more Hispanic than it was in the past, but the market's there. And so the question again comes back into how do you stimulate that market?
When it also says, and we've heard this before, that the casino company Penn National has said it won't seek tax breaks. Is there something in the law that says they may not seek tax breaks, or may they change their mind?
Ann, I'm not a good person to answer that question because this is actually will be located in the city of Columbus, and they will ultimately do that deal, yes.
Okay. Mark, do you know the answer to that question? Are they prohibited from seeking tax breaks, or are they just saying they're not going to?
That I don't know. Okay. I just know at this time they've said that they're not going to seek them. Whether they're prohibited, I'm not sure.
They're not. I mean, I think there's nothing in the law that says casinos
that
are. And there's a chance that, for example, they may access another state program, for example, the Clean Ohio program to clean the site up.
Right.
It may be a possibility in the future. I don't know if that's the case. But, again, that is actually going to be located in the city of Columbus, so Franklin County's involvement is somewhat minimal.
Okay. I'm wondering how you avoid, when you do it on a case-by-case basis and whether this has been a problem, how do you avoid the appearance of bias or favoritism? And I can't imagine that there haven't been companies out there that said, wait a minute, why'd you give them a break and not us?
Right. And that's a very good question. And I think, again, as I've mentioned, our thinking's evolved through time because, truthfully, I believe the Franklin County commissioners believe that new business is good. But existing business is better. Those are people that have made a decision to be here in Columbus, and they don't have to be sold like a company executive from California to move to the mountains of Ohio.
He's smiling.
Yes, listeners. He's smiling because there aren't too many, but there are some. It's a beautiful state. Don't get me wrong.
It is.
But your view of California might be a little different than Ohio. The point there is that it is a situation where the tax abatement policy and incentive policy is trying to recognize the existing businesses first. And our policy at Franklin County does that. Sure, we want new business. Brand new business is brand new dollars into the area and into the system, and that's a great thing for everybody. But the acknowledgement that companies have been here and have done good work and have chosen to stay here needs to be acknowledged too. So the ability to try and help those companies grow is really important. Again, specifically, we've recognized at Franklin County that lending is a critical issue for those businesses, so we've gotten more involved in that game specifically. The question that you asked is, I think, based on the fact that we need to understand that certain people are aggressive in their lives and certain people are happy to sit back. Those that are aggressive, that want to change their businesses or grow their businesses, will work with them. It's not something that if you sit on your hands, you're going to get it. You have to make some sort of demonstrated ability to say, hey, you know, we're really interested in growing and we're wanting to do this. And oh, by the way, we'll live with the terms of your agreement, which is a really important part of this as well. These things are not just given out to anybody.
You've said that similar abatement area could be established for the property surrounding the site of the planned casino.
It's a possibility.
But it was when officials know what developments are going to be like. What does that mean? How does that drive the decision?
Well, again, I think there are targeted industries, for example, that we want to try and look at out there.
Such as?
Well, retail would be one of them for certain. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the program, sales tax is important to Franklin County. So if we can generate more of that, that may be an opportunity. But again, it goes back to job creation. So I think that's one of the items. But certainly a market analysis in that general area is helpful to us to understand what is needed in the general area for the West Side. Again, I think what's really important for your listeners, and they know this, folks that live out on the West Side, is that there are still plenty of viable, solid businesses out there, and they're there because the market has never really disappeared.
Right.
For example, in the city of Columbus, when you look at the Near East Side, the demographic numbers for that area, you know, maybe, sorry, general numbers, but maybe 40,000 people beginning in the 60s. Now hopefully the number's going up, but, you know, 20,000. So they've lost almost half of their population.
Right.
It's not the case in the West Side. Still a very viable market, and understanding what that marketplace needs can be the leader for us to make our decisions on tax incentives.
It's still a viable market, but a lot of the retail did go away, and it does make you wonder, why is that? People are always saying on the West Side, we have money to spend, but we don't have any place to spend it, or not enough places to spend it.
Well, that's a
usually the retailers have a lot better idea about that than any of the rest of us.
Absolutely. And I think the point there is that that's maybe a discussion for another show, because the reality of it is that everybody that's familiar with Columbus will make the case that, you know, things were great until Polaris and, you know, until Tuttle and to some of the other areas. Remember, this was the site of a major regional mall.
Right, the Westland.
Incredibly successful for a number of years. Retail changes, and I think what's really happened is with folks looking at City Center now and the fact that it doesn't even exist anymore, is that retail cycle has shrunk amazingly. And so things change. The market changes, and maybe retail more so than other commercial businesses out there. But again, the consumer was faced with a lot of different choices in a lot of different locations in the city, and I think they voted with their feet in some cases.
How do you look at a potential mix that would enhance and serve the folks that are going to be going over there to use the casino and the people who live there every day?
Well, Ann, one of the things that, again, this is a theme here for me this morning, is the fact that we've gotten a little smarter about
how
we...
Maybe I'm just asking the same question over and over and over.
I don't know if that's the case. But the reality of it is, and I need to make a point, is that we've gotten a little smarter about how we do our business in the public sector. And one of the ways I have a great group of planners that I work with, young guys and women who have come through an educational process that makes them aware that community engagement and involvement drives your plan. And it used to be that you might have a situation where the city or county thought, boy, this is a really great idea. We have to go ahead and do this. Very little public input into that process. Nowadays, all of our plans are driven by public input, and therefore you're asking your residents, the people of the area, to decide what that mix will be. And I think in the Westland area, that still needs to be done. But it is a process that has evolved for us in the public sector, and I think it's one that's benefited everybody.
You know, Mark, a listener, before we take our next break, a listener emailed me this morning. They were concerned about school districts and how they tend to get shafted during these kinds of negotiations. But that's changed now. The state's changed the laws on that, and school districts have to participate in these negotiations, don't they?
Correct. The I guess the ones – often who I wanted to say suffer when we talk about areas such that have been designated for tax increment financing, which is where property taxes are shifted from the agencies that would be getting them, such as Metro Parks or the Columbus Zoo or MRDD, stuff like that. They lose out when taxes go to help pay for developments in some of those areas. But school districts have to participate, correct?
Right. So is that the same thing with what you do, Jim?
Absolutely. And I think this group of county commissioners has recognized the fact that those levy agencies and the school districts are impacted. A number of the deals that we have done have recognized that by giving a small portion back that the schools might have received if they hadn't been abated. Tax abatement policy in Ohio is flawed. I'll be the first one to say that. You're building that tax abatement on the backs of levy agencies and community schools that actually build your quality of life. Why would you shoot yourself in the foot and do that? Unfortunately, that's the way it's structured. But it doesn't mean that a community can't recognize on their own that situation and help those organizations. Now, mind you, one of the key things, it's the but-for argument in economic development. The levy agencies and the school districts will receive what they're currently getting. They just don't benefit in the upside until the abatement or the TIF, as Mark mentioned, burns off. At that time, they get everything that might not have ever existed if it hadn't been for the incentive.
Okay, we have to take a short break. Joining us, Mark Ferenchik of the Columbus Dispatch, Jim Schimmer, Franklin County Economic and Development Planning Director. Coming up, Rob Greenbaum of Ohio State University. He researches these things. What kind of person does that? We'll find out in a second. If you have an experience with a tax abatement, if you want to talk about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Your business will also be associated with a trusted source for national and local news, arts, and culture. For more information, contact Christine Schottich at 247-4469. And thanks for supporting WOSU 820, NPR News.
And good morning. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. And we'll hear about the movement for ordaining women into the priesthood by some members of the Catholic Church and the response of the Church to dissent, including excommunication. That discussion begins at 11 right here on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. Currently 78 degrees in downtown Columbus. We have a little bit of everything today. Some sunshine, some clouds, a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms as well. A high of 88. A few clouds tonight and a chance of rain tonight as well. A low of 68 degrees. Some clouds and a slight chance of rain for Thursday and a high of 88. WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Today at noon, it's Human Service Chamber of Franklin County. High hopes for a new organization. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now to talk about tax abatements and other kinds of tax incentive programs in Ohio is Rob Greenbaum. He is an associate professor in the John Glenn School of Public Affairs at Ohio State University. His research, in part, focuses on economic development tax incentive policies. Also joining us, Mark Ferenchik of the Columbus Dispatch and Jim Schimmer of the Franklin County Economic and Development. I guess that's it, right,
Department.
Jim? Okay, department, right. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How did tax abatements, enterprise zones, tax increment financing, and all those other tax incentive programs out there come into play?
Oh, they've been around for a long time. A lot of the programs I studied started in the early 1980s, and it was a response to some of the deindustrialization that was going on, and it was a way of trying to revitalize distressed areas. And people thought that offering tax abatements would be one way to help revitalize these areas.
They were debated pretty heatedly, though, back a couple 20 years ago when I was covering the legislature, at least. There was a lot of debate over whether it was a wise decision.
Yes. Interestingly, there was a lot of research done on them before they were ever implemented. So there's a lot of papers written in the early 1980s, a lot of debate. An interesting aspect of the whole debate is that there was a lot of support both from conservatives and from liberals, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of the programs got started. The federal level, programs like enterprise zones, actually there was a lot of debate at the national level. The programs never really got implemented, and so the states took the charge and started their own programs.
Now, why does the state get involved in what a county or a city is doing when it comes to these kinds of things?
Well, because a lot of the taxes are paid at the state level is for one, and that varies from state to state. And the programs, again, are going to vary depending on the taxing authority. But the state has a vested interest in what is going on in the cities and the counties because they need to generate the tax revenue. And everybody has their own little perspective, whether it's the local income tax or the county sales tax or the state income tax. And so there are competing interests, and the state's definitely part of that.
Jim Schimmer with us from the Franklin County Economic and Development Planning department. You made the point earlier that it's kind of a balancing act, I think, between what do you need to get and what are you willing to give up in the process. And we have a caller now. Jonathan, you want to talk about what you give up and what – okay.
Well, actually, first I want to apologize for the potential antagonism of my call here.
Just don't be antagonistic, and there'd be nothing to apologize for.
Well, that can't happen. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm a free market arch conservative.
Okay.
And I see a future. I see a present where every taxing authority runs a deficit, and a future where taxes have to go up and services have to come down. So I'd like to know how tax abatements can make sense in that scenario. How can the municipal or state or federal authorities be running deficits and yet still lowering taxes for anybody? I think we should let the chips fall where they may, because we're going to have to increase taxes to everybody. And I'm not sure I said this well enough.
But I'll
take my answer off the air so you guys can all have the last word. But I don't think that the tax abatements from a municipal or any authority that is running a deficit makes any sense.
Okay. Thanks, Jonathan, for your call. Jim?
Well, I think it's a very good point. And, again, I would suspect that the next legislature is going to be looking at how we do our business, especially with incentives. But what I will say is that it's definitely a situation where you're looking at giving up something in the short term for some major benefit in the long term. And that's the but-for argument that I mentioned before. And I think that's generally the philosophy behind the incentives. And certainly I would believe that there's always room for improvement.
So, Rob Greenbaum, the caller makes a point. It's been a point that's been made many, many times, is the sacrifice that's, you know, how do you know that you wouldn't be generating the tax revenue anyways if you didn't offer the incentive?
Right. He makes a few good points. One, certainly there are trade-offs, and we already talked about some mm-hmm. of those trade-offs earlier. If you're cutting taxes to some residents or to some businesses, you either have to cut services someplace or increase the taxes on other residents and other businesses. But again, the idea is you're betting on future tax revenue. And part of the problem is what we just talked about, too, is the nature. A lot of these incentives are at the local level. And so if you're competing against other communities that are offering tax breaks, then you need to be competitive and be aggressive to be in the game, too. And then the other aspect, being a free market person, he was arguing, is that you look at this from the perspective of are there market failures, right? So the free markets work if all the assumptions of free markets are there. But if businesses, viable businesses, don't have access to credit, then that's a market failure, and that's a role for the government to step in and help the market work as the market should work.
So you have to pick your – what are you saying? I mean, that if you want a free market is more complicated than just letting the chips fall where they may.
Right, because we don't live in a free market. The market forces certainly.
Jonathan, are you listening out there? Okay. We don't live in a free – what kind of market do we live in?
Well, it's a mixed market. I mean, the government's involved in almost all aspects of the economy.
Okay.
And that's certainly the case now when you see the situation we find ourselves in is that government is looked to, right or wrong, to be the solution to some of these issues. And our involvement is more involved than – our involvement is stronger than ever. For example, I don't think any government necessarily in Central Ohio wants to get into the lending business. We're forced to do that because their private sector isn't doing that right now. And I'm sure people could argue back and forth on that. But certainly when it comes to micro-enterprise lending where you have a high risk of failure, government does need to step in, at least in our case, and the Franklin County commissioners believe this. It's a right place for us to be playing.
And it's more than just lending money, though. When you come to micro-enterprise, you're also counseling. You're also, you know, there's a lot more to it than just shelling out money.
Exactly.
Rob, you have said that economic development incentive policies are missing the mark if they are intended to target areas of distress of particular industries. How so?
Right. And one of the papers we wrote, we really looked at some of the theory behind geographically targeted economic development incentives. And the idea is that you want to target areas of distress. And for various reasons, in this particular paper we looked at Ohio, but for various reasons, oftentimes political reasons, it's difficult to offer incentives in one part of the state or one part of a city and not offer similar incentives in other places. So what happens is you might start with a very targeted program initially, or you might not. You might already need to have an untargeted program just to get it passed. And so what happens is if the intent is to target a particular area, but you offer the incentives more broadly, then the program becomes less effective because it's not providing that incentive for businesses to either relocate or to hire more employees in the areas where you want them to locate.
Yeah.
And I was going to just say, and I think Rob's right about that, because a great example is the CRA program, Community Reinvestment Area program, which was originally done to stimulate housing in areas that were having problems and difficulty with construction of new housing. That program was sort of, I think maybe you used the word hijacked. I'm not sure if that was the right word, but it's changed. I mean, it's remarkable how that program suddenly became an industrial development program. And the original emphasis of the program, was morphed. And so it became an entitlement to a lot of brokers in the area in the state of Ohio. The other thing is that, and again, this may be a topic for another program, but Rob brought up a point about the incentives being used within the state. And it goes to the whole discussion, I think, of urban versus rural and the Strickland administration's view of the fact that they were very much dedicated to urban development and redevelopment. A number of my colleagues that are out in rural areas and communities that have their own towns say, hey, we need to evolve the same way as downtown Columbus evolved. And your policy doesn't really or your proposed policies would not allow us to do that. So equity is a hard thing to come by when you're looking at incentive policies.
Is that true, though, when an area outside the center city says we need to develop just like Columbus has developed? Is that necessarily true, Rob?
That they need to develop the same way.
They need the same kinds of incentives.
Right. And that's probably part of the problem, too, is that the same incentives or the same – it's not just tax incentives, but other economic development efforts
right.
are not the same programs are not necessarily appropriate in the urban areas and in the rural areas. And they have different problems. And using a broad brush type of policy is probably not the most effective way of approaching the problem.
But it helps when it comes to politics.
Oh, it's – yeah, sure.
Yeah, broad brushes. What should be then, Rob, the goal of tax breaks? Pick your tax break. I think there's 16 or 18 varieties at the Ohio Department of Development level.
Right. I think Jim had it right when you want to think of it in terms of being a catalyst. You don't want the incentives to be the reason a business stays in an area or relocates to an area, but you want it at the margin, you want it to make the difference. But when the incentives disappear, you want that business to remain there. So again, you want to be strategic and have the incentives help the business make that decision, but not be the reason why they're locating there.
You quoted another researcher in one of your papers who argued that incentives should be judged in terms of their success at improving economic welfare rather than just whether jobs are created or capital investments are induced. How do you define economic welfare? Because most people, it's jobs, jobs, jobs. It's the economy, stupid, it's jobs.
Right. So you look at the welfare of the local population, whether it be unemployment rates or poverty rates or levels of education achieved. And it's one of the concerns, too, is if you just create jobs in an area, we're a mobile society. So the people actually working in the jobs may be living, within the metro area, but not necessarily in that particular neighborhood. So you really want to think about the welfare of the people actually living in the neighborhood that you're trying to improve.
They were talking about the Grandview Yard development and how and at the same time as that was being announced, Nationwide was announcing that it was moving 1,400 jobs downtown, which probably had a lot to do with why the mayor agreed to extend water service from the city to Grandview, et cetera, et cetera. Something of a quid pro quo there. But it made me wonder about, well, what about the people who probably moved out to Dublin, where those 1,400 jobs were? Now, what about their quality of life? And what about the regional aspect of that? It seems like it does seem a little bit like when it comes to cases like that of kind of a pinball mentality.
Yeah. If you're just moving the jobs with the same people and the same jobs to another location, you know, from the state's perspective, that's not really creating new economic development. From a local perspective, though, if you're creating if you're creating a core sense of activity in a particular area, though, if you're thinking about the Arena District area, there are benefits. There are benefits to other businesses for having other employment in similar businesses located in the same area. We call that agglomeration economies. And there certainly may be a role for the government in encouraging that. But just job shifting, particularly if it's the same people, from a higher level like the state level, doesn't necessarily have a net benefit.
We have an email from a listener, writes, it seems to me that American governments are totally missing the big picture and wasting time essentially setting a different tax rate for each enterprise and competing with other American locales. What we need are more exports, give our entrepreneurial spirit a boost through the promotion of learning about the many, many other cultures of the world so that we can generate ideas for products to invent, market, and sell to them. So that's part of the matrix as well?
Sure.
Just the idea of ideas?
Well, ideas are the foundation of all business and certainly of all business startups. Columbus's involvement in globalization has increased tremendously in the last few years and will continue. You know, we're looking for open markets as well as anybody else is, and a global economy allows us to do that. We have been working hard, I think, to promote international economic development and make Columbus an international city in a lot of ways, and I think we're seeing results.
We only have about a minute left, but Rob, I wanted to ask you, how does Ohio stack up against other states in terms of its buffet of tax incentive programs?
Well, we've got a lot of different programs, and one of the things Ohio is really trying to work to do, and they still have some distance to go, is to be a little bit more strategic in terms of reducing the number of programs and targeting a little bit better and having what happens is we add program. The next administration comes in and they add a new set of programs, but the old set of programs stay in place. And so you want to make it an easy place for businesses to come and make it obvious to them kind of who you talk to and what the possibilities are if you move to the state.
All right, we're out of time. Rob Greenbaum, Ohio State University professor, thank you very much for being with us today. Jim Schimmer, Planning Director for the Franklin County Department of Economic and Development, and Mark Ferencek, Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very
much. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.